Is everybody in the world writing a book? Online self-publishing companies think so. Just Google the phrase self-publishing and watch your computer screen light up with promises of professional publishing for premium profits. I never thought I'd write a book. Never thought I could write a book. But that was before I joined a book club. Discussing the struggles of others gave me the freedom and anonymity to voice my own. So, in April 2010, I joined the ranks of thousands of aspiring writers and yielded to the human urge to pen my story. Now, purging the soul is good, but when you pick at old scabs, they sting and the wounds threaten to bleed again. 3:30 every morning, my Hewlett-Packard PC powered on as my eyes opened up. A strong cup of instant coffee and reading glasses were always within arm's reach. The sound of an approaching train just two blocks outside my window takes me back to Arcadia Circle on the northwest side of Atlanta, Georgia, where many black people lived. Back to the hot, dusty days of the South. To tear-filled eyes and a hungry mouth. Back to the 1950s and 60s, long before instant coffee and the internet. Back to memories I cherished, and some I'll never forget. At the age of 10, I thought my first chance to ride the train would also be my first chance to share with my classmates what I did for summer vacation. Little did I know that riding the rails would be my first trip to hell. My father worked as a cook on Southern Railway, and his route stretched from Atlanta to New York and Washington, D.C. Daddy had met and befriended a classy and well-traveled Negro gentleman from Brooklyn, New York. His name was Lanier Thrasher. His nickname was Pete. I called him Uncle Pete. And Uncle Pete extended to our family an open invitation to visit him in Brooklyn at any time. In August 1960, three of my 10 siblings and I took our first train ride to New York. The preparation for that trip began weeks before, just in case. Mama believed in just in cases. The night before, four heads had been washed, eight knees and elbows had been scrubbed, and our clothes had been mended, washed, and ironed. Daddy assured us that food would be free because there was always leftovers from the white folks' meal in the dining car. But Mama packed a brown paper bag with salmon biscuits, just in case. In the early hours of a Sunday morning inside of Union Station, we boarded the train. As we climbed aboard the steel steps of one car, I saw a colored only sign posted on the accordion-type door. Inside the air-conditioned coach, my sister and I sat on one row, my two brothers sat in another, Mama sat across the aisle to keep a watchful eye on us all, just in case. Windows that were sealed closed gave me a panoramic view of the countryside. An hour after the breakfast call, Daddy guided us to the diner. I couldn't wait to feast on the white folks' leftovers. My eyes lit up when I saw the sea of tables draped with white linen cloths, and on each a long red rose rested in a small crystal vase. As soon as we were seated, the train came to an abrupt stop. The conductor and several crewmen ran through the diner. Something had happened. Now, Daddy rushed us back to our seats. Mama anxiously whispered a word of prayer. Outside my window, I saw a dozen of the train's crew scurrying back and forth, crawl beneath the train, and huddle in deep discussion. Within an hour, the train lurched forward once again en route to our northern destination. When it became apparent that we would not eat from the diner, Mama opened her brown paper bag and gave us each a salmon biscuit. Then we noticed no cool air flowing in our car. The train's air conditioning system was broken. The windows were sealed and the air quickly became thin. Meanwhile, all of the colored crew was summoned to individually fan each white passenger. Inside our cabin, the temperature rose, our foreheads glistened, and my hair began to nap. When the train pulled into High Point, North Carolina, Mama rushed us inside the transit building seeking a bathroom. Once inside the terminal, the large sign with black letters that said, "Whites Only," answered her question long before she asked it. Mama had seen many of those signs back in Atlanta, and she knew exactly what to do and where to go. Turning on her heels, she led us outside to a wooded area across the dirt road where we relieved our swollen bladders. The remainder of the trip was long and uneventful. In Brooklyn, there is no dirt, at least none on the ground, only concrete. And everyone knows children need dirt. A concrete stoop was my only playground for the coming week. 30 minutes of idle sitting outside on the gritty concrete stoop was no fun at all. And this trip was not like I thought it would be. Nothing I would ever share at my school's show and tell. Sometimes this sound reminds me of the midnight train that took me back to Atlanta, Georgia. The train that keeps Georgia and my childhood home on Arcadia Circle forever on my mind.